भव्या भवत् प्रभो। या प्लीज ओके सॉरी सर्वं भवानि सर्वम ऑल एंड एवरीथिंग ही सर्टेनली एतत् दिस भवान योर गुड सेल्फ वेद नो भूत ऑल दैट इज क्रिएटेड और बॉर्न भव्य All that will be created or born. Bhavat, all that is being created. Prabhu, you the master of everything. Kara amalakvat, just like a walnut within your grip. Vishwam, the universe, Vijnanavasitam, within your knowledge scientifically, Tava, your, translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My dear father, all this is known to you scientifically because whatever was created in the past, whatever will be created in the future, or whatever is being created at present, as well as everything within the universe, is within your grip, just like a walnut. Purport. Brahma is the direct creator of the manifested universe and everything within the universe. He therefore knows what happened in the past, what will happen in the future, and what is happening at present. Three principal items, namely the living being, the phenomenal world, and the controller, are all in continuous action, past, present, and future. And the direct manager is supposed to know everything of such actions and reactions, as one knows of a walnut, about a walnut within a grip of one's palm. The direct manufacturer of a particular thing is supposed to know how he learned the art of manufacturing, where he got the ingredients, how he set it up, and how the products in the manufacturing process are being turned out. Because Brahma is the firstborn living being, naturally, he is supposed to know everything about creative functions. Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnupadaya कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी इति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे वांचाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। Hare Krishna. So today morning, we are discussing from the Srimad Bhagavatam the discussion between Narada and Brahma. This chapter is titled as The Cause of All Causes. And Narada is actually inquiring from Brahma. Initially, he treats Brahma as if Brahma is the supreme. And then Brahma tells, no, I am not the supreme. There is the supreme Lord, Krishna, who is above all of us. And now he is asking about the broad cosmic hierarchy. What is the position of Brahma? What is the position of Krishna? And there are these answers being given. So, today, I'll talk on the topic of divine omniscience. Omniscience, divine refers to God. Omni refers to all. Like omnidirectional mic is a mic which takes input from all directions. Unidirectional mic takes from one direction only. So, omniscience, science means to know. So, science is to know systematically. Omniscience is to know everything. So, Bhuta Bhavya Bhavat Prabho, in the verse that we recited, it is said that Brahmaji is telling, or Narada is telling Brahmaji that you know everything. So, I will talk about omniscience, what it means and what it does not mean. And it'll discuss especially the logical challenges that come with the idea of omniscience and how those challenges are addressed within the broad Vedic philosophy. So, I'll talk about omniscience, that what are the logical challenges, why the idea of omniscience is somewhat problematic, and then the theological solutions to that problem or insights for solving that problem within the broad Vedic tradition, specifically our Gaudiya tradition. So, what are the, first of all, omniscience means the idea that you know everything, past, present and future. Now, something similar is said in the Bhagavad Gita also, when Krishna says, Vedaham samati tani, vartamanani cha arjuna, bhavishyani cha bhutani, mam tu vedana kashchana. So, in the series of verses 724, 725, 2726, Krishna is talking about his position in relationship with the material world. And there he makes a similar claim. So now, when we talk about omniscience, there is, within the Vedic context, in general, the Vedic context is not based on digital logic. Digital logic means one or zero. This is the right way and this is the wrong way. Yeah, there are some cases in that. But with respect to omniscience, when we talk about it, there are gradations of omniscience. And Brahmaji is also considered omniscient, but at a particular level. So I will look at omniscience at various levels and we'll see how it addresses the challenges. But let's first begin with what are the challenges. The biggest challenge that omniscience presents is to the idea of free will. That if God knows the future, to know something means to presume that it is fixed. Then if it is fixed, then how do we have free will? That human free will becomes challenged by divine omniscience. So, if God knows what I am going to do tomorrow and day after, then am I really freely choosing what I am doing, or is it already controlled by God? So, how does divine omniscience reconcile with human free will? That is one problem. Another problem is, this is a more immediately relevant problem for us because we are on a human journey. But another more theological problem is that omniscience can seem to contradict even God's omnipotence. if God knows the future, then does he have the power to change the future? If he has the power to change the future, then does he know the future? That means if God knows tomorrow this is going to happen, then does God have the power to change that? And if he can change it, then did he really know what was going to happen? So, this is a little intricate, and I won't go too much into that, but we'll try to address this also. So, omniscience is often problematic because it challenges the idea broadly of agency. If say we are playing a game of chess, and somebody says, I already know I'm going to win the match. Have you fixed the match? How do you know you're going to win? Now, if it is the case that one player is so good and the other player is pathetic, then it's okay, I know I'm going to win. But if both players are more or less equally matched, then we ask, how do you know? Like in this, now the sports betting is becoming huge. So whenever somebody bets a big amount of money and they win, and if they have bet on an unlikely team and that team wins, then everybody asks, was this match fixed? You know, did really player play properly? Or was something fixed over here? So the word fixed here is used in a different sense. Fixed means it is unethically, illegally prearranged. So is all of life like a fixed game if God knows everything that is going to happen? That is the question. So is life itself all fixed? That's the question which we'll try to address. Now, I said that there are gradations in omniscience also. It's not 1-0 that God is omniscient or he's not omniscient. There are gradations. And at the bottom level of this gradation is basically the cause-effect mechanism. And this is the level of omniscience that Brahma has, as Prabhupada explains in the purport. Prabhupada says basically that if somebody has manufactured something, then they know, okay, if we put this much of this ingredient and we put this much of this ingredient, then this is what will come out. Now Prabhupada also puts a caveat over there. He says they are supposed to know. Many times people don't even know. Like some nowadays there are big industries, the manufacturer may not even have much awareness of ground level realities. But it's like somebody is a cook. Now the cook is expected to know, okay, we have put this much of this ingredient, this much of this ingredient, this much of this ingredient, and then we'll get this much quantity of food. If you put this much sugar, then it'll be this much sweet. Put this much sugar, it'll be less sweet, whatever. So basically, Brahma's omniscience is at the level of knowledge of cause-effect connections, cause-effect mechanisms. That means, if this action is done, this will happen. If this action is done, this will happen. If this choice is made, this will happen. So, the idea is, this, even in popular culture, in say Star Wars or something, this is called as God mode. God mode means basically what? That there is one character, generally the villain, who is observing everything that is happening. Maybe there's a car chase going on, and somebody's fleeing and somebody's chasing. Now, if that person knows the entire map, okay, if you turn this way, you'll go on this road. If you turn this way, you'll go on this road. You know, if this person turns this way, then we can have our people trapping him over there. They come over here, we can have this person to knock him off over there. So basically, God mode is like knowing the entire map. So when somebody knows the entire map, that means they are not controlling which road a particular person is choosing. But whichever road the person chooses, they know where that road is going to take. So this example also of the walnut, that is similar. That if I have a walnut in my hand, now, when I am holding the walnut, if my hand is wet, the walnut is going to become wet. If I crush it with great force, if I am very strong, it will get into powder. It will become powder. If I put it under some heavy object, it can get crushed. So, basically, this is omniscience at the level of cause-effect mechanisms knowledge. Now, this level of omniscience does not interfere with or override free will. That a person can have free will and still a person can know. If you do this, this will happen. If you do this, this will happen. If you do this, this will happen. This level of omniscience, even great sages can have. When we talk about Trikalajna, they know past, present and future. Now that does not mean that they are controlling the past, present and future. If there are many people who are Trikalajna, then if all of them start controlling and all of them start controlling in different ways, there'll be chaos. And if all people are Trikalajna and all of them are controlling exactly in the same way, that becomes very much like Mayavad. The idea that they are all one. So, generally, Trikalajna is to know the three phases of time. This being Trikalajna is a yogic siddhi. It is a perfection that can be achieved by yoga practice. And it is also a potency that is given to certain empowered beings. So, for example, Brahmaji has the responsibility of creating the universe. And he needs to know what is happening. Now, one of the most frustrating ways of working for someone is to have the responsibility without having the power. How do I do this work? Now, you manage the money, but you have no access to money. How do I manage it? Isn't it? So, it's like Krishna is not a manager like that. When Krishna gives power, he gives actual power. Om Purnam Adaha Purnam Idam. Purnam Idam means when those living beings are in this world, they are given the power to manage this world. Of course, Krishna has oversight. Maya Adhyakshena Prakriti. But Brahmaji, for managing the universe, requires the capacity to know what happens in the universe. That what is the cause-effect mechanism correlation. And this is how Brahma's omniscience is being explained. It's like a walnut in the hand. Now we don't know everything. If a walnut is in our hand, we know okay the shape of the walnut. We know the thickness of the walnut. We can even know, if we are expert, we can surmise the age of the walnut. But that doesn't necessarily mean we know everything that is inside the walnut. So this is, we could say, limited omniscience. It is omniscience, but it is limited. And this is the level of omniscience of empowered beings. That empowered beings can, they can Trikalajna, they can come from yogi siddhi, or they can come from punya, which gives them some position in the universal administration. So, like Brahmaji, for example. So, this is the first level. Now, Krishna, of course, has this level of omniscience. The cause-effect mechanisms, he knows very well. But Krishna's omniscience goes beyond this. It is also, at one more level, the omniscience can be understood is that it's knowledge of conditionings. Generally, when you talk about cause-effect mechanism, it's more about the gross world. But we all have our conditionings. And based on our conditionings, you know, if a mother tells a child, okay, you have a TV in your room and you have your books. Don't watch TV, study the books. Now, the mother may tell the child that, but based on the child's nature, the mother can anticipate what the child is going to do. Maybe the child will study for 10-15 minutes and then start watching TV or start playing some video game. So, based on conditionings, what happens is there is a certain level of predictability. Now, predictability is not certainty. So, this is the level of knowledge of future that is accessible through astrology. Astrology does not literally make a person Trikalajna. It's not that they know everything about past, present and future. But if a person is really good at astrology, and not all astrologers are equally good, but if a person is good, then they can know about the cause-effect mechanisms, but they can also, to some extent, understand the conditionings, understand the nature of a person. And based on that, they can predict what kind of actions that the person is going to do. But here also, predictability is not inevitability. Inevitable means this is how it is going to happen. That it's not like that. And that's why astrology, even if we can call it a science in a very broad sense of the word, it is not as precise a science as math. No, math, if you add 7 plus 11, it's always going to be 18. But astrology cannot be that predictable. But in general, when the conditionings of a person, here I'm using astrology, don't astrologers know the cause effect? Well, they can know based on palmistry and other things. They can look at horoscope and things like that. Some level, some things about the future can be known. But if the astrologer knows the person individually and studies the person, they can understand the conditionings. Now, this is the level at which there can be some guidance that can be given. So, Krishna knows our conditionings. And Krishna can predict what choices we are going to make. This is, Krishna knows our conditionings far better than any astrologer can know. Krishna knows our conditionings far better than any spiritual guide or any material counselor or anyone can know. Krishna knows us fully in a way that no one else can know us. So in that sense, Krishna's predictive power is far more than that anyone else's power. Having said this, Krishna has given every soul free will. And that means that the soul has the capacity to act freely. And when we say a particular action will please Krishna, that means that we have a conditioning to act in a particular way, but if we act differently, that will please Krishna. Just like, say, if we have 2-3 children and say we get some nice big chocolate for one of the children's birthday. Now the child's tendency might be, this is my chocolate, I'm going to eat all of it. But if that child takes the chocolate and shares with the siblings, the parents are pleased. Now the child has a particular tendency to grab everything, but the child goes against that. That pleases the parents. So similarly, while Krishna knows our conditionings, Krishna's pleasure is when we act against our conditionings of selfishness, of self-centeredness, and that pleases him. That's why predictability is not inevitably. Krishna knows the cause of a connection in the outer world, but Krishna also knows the conditionings in the inner world. So in general, the word cause-effect is used for more for physical phenomena. At the physical level, we say there is a particular cause and then there is a particular effect. Now at a psychological level, the principle is similar, but there is a slight difference. There is a particular stimulus and then there is a particular response. Now, much of psychology, or some branches of psychology, they treat the inside of a person like a black hole, like a black box that we don't know anything about. We can only know what is the stimulus and what is the response. But we humans do have free will. And free will means that although a particular stimulus is likely to trigger a particular response, it doesn't have to. And if we choose a response that is in harmony with Krishna's message, then that pleases Krishna. So this is the second level of understanding. Now, in this case, there is the idea that, okay, so does Krishna really know the future? If we can act according to our free will, then does, if our free will is really free, does Krishna know the future? I'll come to that in a minute. But one important point over here is this level of understanding of omniscience is that God's knowledge of the future. It is similar to our knowledge of the past. What do I mean by our knowledge of the past? Basically, both of these are information without intervention. So, for example, I can remember, oh, today I set the alarm at 3 o'clock, but I turned it off and I woke up at 4 o'clock. Now, I would have much rather preferred to wake up at 3 o'clock. I know what happened, but I can't change it. So, our knowledge of the past, we do have knowledge. But this knowledge is without the capacity to change it. Now, in our case, we lack the power to change. Whereas Krishna chooses not to use that power. So, Krishna knows the future in the sense that it's information without intervention. That is the whole point of Purnam Idam. This world is complete in itself. It is not that Krishna is constantly intervening in the world. Of course, we can say Krishna is present in the world and the mechanisms of this world are sustained by Krishna. Maya adhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetu nanena kaunteya jagadviparivartate. So here in this verse, actually Krishna is talking about a complex causal chain. What in 9.10 in the Bhagavad Gita, what's Krishna's oversight? Now oversight means supervision. Oversight doesn't mean a mistake. Sometimes, oh, it was my oversight that I forgot that. That's not the meaning over here. Oversight. So, Krishna, maya adhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. Under Krishna's oversight, material nature creates everything. And then Krishna says that hetu anena kaunteya. Anena is this material nature. So, under this material nature, jagat viparivartate. So, under material nature, changes occur. So, in one sense, this is Purna. This, that material world operates according to certain mechanisms and generally Krishna doesn't intervene in those mechanisms. So, the material world is also Purna. Now, why are we discussing this over here? The point is that Krishna knows the mechanisms why the material world is working. In that sense, he knows how things are going to happen. Now, Krishna can intervene if he wants. He generally chooses not to. Now, on the rare occasions when Krishna intervenes, that is what we call as miracles. Now, miracles are different from coincidences. Generally, coincidences, they are within the laws of nature. So, now words have general meaning and technical meaning. So, coincidence means, say, you know, we went on a journey and we were at a particular place and there, at the same time, an old friend we had not met for 30 years also happens to be there. And what we call as yoga yoga. Yoga yoga is not chamatkar. They are two different things. Although they can be used sometimes in normal parlance interchangeably. So for example, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj describes in a journey home how he was separated from his friend and he was up in the Himalayas in Nepal and saw somebody walking along. They shared an umbrella together without even looking at each other. And then they turned and it was his old friend. So that, it can seem miraculous, but it is a coincidence. It is within the laws of nature. It is not that Maharaj flew by the air like a bird or his friend came by some mystical means. So coincidences are there. But coincidences themselves are amazing, but coincidences operate within the laws of nature. Whereas miracles, they involve suspension of the laws of nature. So for example, Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill. That is a miracle. Now, Bhima being poisoned by Duryodhan and being thrown into the river, and the snakes in that river having a poison that is an antidote to the poison that Duryodhan had given Bhima. That is a coincidence. That is also God's arrangement. But that is within the laws of nature. One poison counters another poison. But Krishna lifting over the hill, now that is a miracle. So sometimes, occasionally, Krishna suspends the laws of nature. Normally, things work according to the laws of nature. And that's why, after the Govardhan Leela, even the Vrajavasis ask, Krishna is just a small child, how did he lift Govardhan? So it is not that people in the past were superstitious and they just believed in all kind of fairy tales. Even they had logic. Hey, this doesn't normally happen. But when Nanda Maharaj told them that Gargacharya told that this child Krishna is not ordinary. He is just like Vishnu. Oh yeah, Vishnu can lift Govardhan. So the idea is, science, it operates based on the laws of nature. We study the laws of nature. Now of course, when Prabhupada uses the word laws of nature, he's referring to karma. When science uses the word of laws of nature, they're using more Newtonian laws of physics or thermodynamics and those laws. But the broad principle is in science studies the laws of nature. Now, God operates above the laws of nature. Although he does not intervene. So, Krishna is saying, Maya adhyakshena, supervision. It is not constant intervention. On rare occasions, Krishna can intervene. And that's why miracles, when they do happen, miracles, they are not against science. Some people say that, oh, you believe in miracles, you are unscientific. No, miracles are not against science. They are above science. We accept the validity of science, but we accept that there is a reality beyond that also. So they are above science. Everybody, we accept the principle of gravity, but we also understand that Krishna controls the law of gravity. So when Krishna lifted the Govardhan hill, somebody asked, how did Krishna find the center of gravity of Govardhan so that he could balance it properly? Krishna does not need to find the center of gravity because he is the source of gravity. And he can suspend gravity when he wants. So the point I'm making here is, Krishna, we are talking here about this point that God's knowledge of the future is like our knowledge of the past. It is information without intervention. In our case, we can't intervene. In Krishna's case, he can intervene, but he chooses not to. He chooses not to. Now, that brings us to the last point over here. That, this will answer the question about God's, whether omniscience interferes with omnipotence also. See, ultimately, what is the purpose of existence? The purpose of existence is the reciprocation of love. And love is actually far greater than knowledge. What does that mean, love is greater than knowledge? It's like if we love something, we don't really care whether we know it or not. Now suppose there is some mystery novel. It's like, okay, I don't want to know who did what. In movie reviews, there is spoiler alert. That because the whole suspense is in knowing. But suppose, somebody say loves a particular movie very much, or they love a particular scene in the movie. Now, they may have seen that scene a dozen times, but they want to see it again. Not because they don't know it, but they just want to experience it. So love involves knowing. But love is also much more about experiencing. So even if we say Krishna, if you consider Krishna Lila, Krishna knows that when he's going to run, Mother Yashoda is going to chase him. And then he's going to run here, he's going to run there, and then she's going to catch him. And then she's going to try tie him up, and he's not going to get tied. Now, you can tell the most enjoyable pastime in the most boring and flat way. Isn't it? But for Krishna, it's not about knowing. It's about experiencing. It's experiencing the love of Mother Yashoda and reciprocating with that love. So from that perspective, whether Krishna knows the future or not, whether it's in the spiritual domain or the material domain, it does not matter. What is vital about existence is not knowing. We are not just information processing machines where, okay, this information is known, this information is not known. We are actually souls who long to love and be loved. And love is essentially an experience. It's an experiential reality. It's not just a cognitive or informational reality. Information is required, no doubt. But love is essentially experiential. And the very nature of Krishna in the spiritual world is that he subordinates his divinity and he subordinates his omniscience to the reciprocation of love. That's why there are times in Krishna Lila when Krishna apparently appears to be bewildered. When the demon Shalva gets a look alike of Krishna's father Vasudev and lops off the head, Krishna appears bewildered for a moment. Why is that? Krishna wants to experience various emotions, including the emotion of shock. Bibhatsa, Bhayanaka, all these are also rasas. Krishna wants to experience that. So for Krishna, knowing is not as important as loving. And loving centers on experiencing. And that's why there is the concept of Yoga Maya. It's interesting, just before the Vedaham Samhitani comes, just immediately next to that the verse comes, Naham Prakasha Sarvasya Yoga Maya Samavita Mudhoyam Navijanati Loko Mamajimavyam Yoga Maya. So for Krishna, the important thing is not knowing, is not to know things, it is to experience the reciprocation of love. And that's why as devotees, we need to focus on what Krishna is focusing on. Even if Krishna knows, for example, when we are going to get liberated and go back to Godhead. If say we are going to go back to God after 3 lifetimes. And somebody says, why practice bhakti for 3 lifetimes? I'll start practice for 2 lifetimes. I'll practice only in the 3rd lifetime then. No. If we practice bhakti right now, we will experience a richer life, a deeper life, a sweeter life. Because it will be a life filled with the reciprocation of love. And yes, being in the material world has its challenges. There are our conditionings, there are external conditions which are obstacles. But through those obstacles, we can express our love for Krishna. And thus, we can experience proximity to Krishna. So even if the specific event of going back to Godhead is something which is going to happen after 3 lifetimes, we can experience life as if we are with Krishna even now. If we are trying to serve Krishna. So Krishna has multiple purposes when he is doing anything. And his purpose is not just to know. He does know. But his purpose is to reciprocate love. And this is how. So the last is. For Krishna, the connection. The loving connection is much more important than simply cognition. Cognition is more about information. Krishna is concerned more about loving. And if we are concerned about that, then the question of divine omniscience and human free will, they pale into insignificance. And now, does Krishna's omnipotence come in the way of his omnipotence? Does it interfere with his free will to change things? See, Krishna is omniscient. He knows the past. He is also omnipotent. But more importantly, underlying all of these, Krishna is omnibenevolent. He is Surudam Sarvabhutanam. He is the well-wisher, the lover of everyone. And that is the defining attribute. See, for Krishna's attributes are not something that he is stuck with. Some people who are short, they wish that they are tall. But imagine somebody says 7.5 or 8 feet. And they decide to become a spy. It's very difficult for a person who is that tall to be discreet or hidden. It will just be noticed by everyone. So what happens if they are tall? They are stuck with their tallness. They are stuck with their height and they can't suddenly become short. Now Krishna is not stuck with his attributes. Krishna is not defined by his attributes. Krishna defines his attributes. That means Krishna is greater than the greatest. Mahato Mahiyan. At the same time, he can be Anoraniyan. He can be smaller than the smallest. So, when Krishna wants to do the good of someone, Krishna can sometimes exercise his omnipotence and Krishna can sometimes exercise his omniscience. For Krishna, these are attributes that he chooses to manifest when he wants. So, Krishna's attributes, it's not that they control him. He's not stuck with them. They don't control him. He controls them. That's what I mean by they don't define him. He defines them. So, for Krishna, his omniscience and his omnipotence are both powers. When he wants, he exhibits them. When he doesn't want, he doesn't exhibit them. So, when Krishna is wanting to exhibit his omnipotence, he can make his some mystical way by which no amount of rope is enough to tie him. But then that same Krishna, it seems, can't untie the rope that has tied him eventually. He needs somebody else to come up. You know, normally even an ordinary thief can find some way to break free from the knots. And no thief can make their body so big that unlimited amount of ropes are not enough to touch them, to tie them up. So how is Krishna able to make the rope insufficient, but then Krishna is insufficient to untie the rope? That is, for the purpose of reciprocation of love, Krishna can exhibit his omnipotence when he wants, and Krishna can conceal his, withdraw his omnipotence when he wants. So for us, the important thing is that Krishna loves us and Krishna cares for us. And when we try to serve him, we focus on the principle of connecting with him. Then it doesn't matter whether our future is predetermined or it's not predetermined. It is, if we are turning towards Krishna and loving him, then our future will be better. Even if the external circumstances may be fixed. Doesn't matter. You know, if a devotee is supposed to meet with an accident and going to die at a particular time. Yes, that devotee may die. But if the devotee is dedicating oneself to Krishna, then the experience of death will be much different than if that devotee had not dedicated themselves to Krishna. See, in one sense, Parikshit Maharaj is going to curse to be dying in 7 days and he died in 7 days. But the experience of death was very different for him because he was absorbed in Krishna. And that choice to absorb ourselves in Krishna, that is always up to us. That is not controlled by Krishna. In fact, Krishna wants us to turn towards him. I'll conclude with this last point of how important this connection with Krishna is for Krishna. In 7.16 to 19 in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about those who approach him and surrender him. Chaturvidha bhajante maam. Those who surrender to him. Now there, three of the four categories of people, artho, artharthi and jigyasu, they are not coming out of love. They are coming simply out of curiosity or material need or something like that. And yet Krishna refers to all of them as udaraha. Now udaraha can mean broad-minded, as Prabhupada translates it, but it can also mean charitable. So Ramanujacharya in his Gita commentary takes this meaning as charitable. And then he raises the question that normally it is the giver of charity who is considered charitable, not the receiver of charity. Isn't it? A human being is going to Krishna. Krishna, I'm in trouble. Please free me. Krishna, I need money. Please give me some money. Please give me some resources. And Krishna is saying, such a person who comes to me, udaraha sarva evaite. So why is Krishna calling one who is seeking charity as charitable. He says, because Krishna is so eager that we offer our consciousness to Him, that we offer our heart to Him, that for any reason, if we turn our heart towards Him, even if it is for some material things, Krishna is so pleased. He says, you have come to me. It is so wonderful. You are so charitable. Krishna is so hungry for our love that even if it is not unmotivated love, even if it is motivated love, Krishna is pleased with it. It's like a child who has gone away from the parents for a long time. And the child comes back to the parents because the child is in trouble. But the parents are not angry. Oh, you came to me only when you were in trouble. Oh, at last you came back. That's so wonderful. So that Krishna is eager for us to offer our heart to Him. And that is something which is in our control alone. Krishna controls everything in the world except our heart. And it is our heart that He wants the most. So we always have the free will to turn our heart or turn even a tiny portion of our heart to Krishna and offer it to Him. And that will please Him and that will enrich our heart with divine fulfillment, divine joy. And thus, this is the ultimate power of our free will to turn and offer our heart to Krishna. And therein lies our life's greatest joy. So I'll summarize what I discussed today. We were primarily discussing the topic of divine omniscience and how the challenges to it can be addressed. So I discussed four main points. First of all, the challenges. What is the challenge? First is the human free will. If God knows the future, then can we really choose what we do in the future? And then also to divine will. Can Krishna change Himself, change the future? And then we discussed three levels of omniscience. First was omniscience in terms of cause-effect mechanism. This is the level of omniscience that Brahma has. And this, of course, Krishna has. This is also the level of omniscience that sages can get. This is limited omniscience. Then we talk about conditionings. Knowing not just the external cause and effect, but conditionings. That gives a certain level of predictability, but predictability is not inevitability. So Krishna knows what we are likely to do, but we can please Him by doing something different. And in this connection we discussed, it's information without intervention. It's our knowledge of the past. We can't change the past. Krishna can, but Krishna does not change. And the last point we discussed was, Krishna's focus is on connection. Krishna's focus is on a loving connection with us. Which is far, far more important than cognition. Cognition is knowing. So, Krishna wants us to love Him. For Krishna, experience is far more important than knowledge. And for Him, even if the specific course of events that are going to happen in our life is fixed, but the experience of those events can change for us and can change for Him if we offer our heart to Krishna. So, offering our heart to Krishna, that we always have free will. And that domain is not controlled by Krishna, but rather by controlling it and offering it to Krishna, each one of us can have a richer life, no matter what about our future may or may not be controlled. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Is there any one quick question? Yes.
Thank you, Guruji, for a wonderful class. The third point which we were discussing about Krishna's focus is on connection. So how that is the third level? Like earlier two levels, we can understand that there is a cause and effect mechanism.
Third level is even if we assume, for argument's sake, that Krishna knows the choices that we are going to make in the future. Now, does that actually mean that our choices are controlled? Not necessarily. Say Krishna exists outside the time domain, so He knows. Like I talked about God mode. So normally the villains in science fiction, When they are in the God mode, they can basically say which character is where, which character is going where. But Krishna's God mode will be, Krishna can not only see the character's physical location, but he can also look at their mental disposition. And Krishna can choose, Krishna can know what we are going to do. So, but still, if we do that which brings us closer to Krishna, that pleases him. So that's why I said that the connection means, even if Krishna has omniscience, Krishna subordinates that omniscience. Like, he does not, in Vrindavan, doesn't act omniscient all the time. So even if Krishna has the capacity to know what we are going to do, he doesn't really care for that as much as what we actually do. Okay? Thank you. Yes, Mataji? Okay, you have a question?
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. You said Krishna is not controlling our heart. I could not understand it because everything is under his control, no? That's what.
Is everything under Krishna's control? Ultimately, not immediately. See, the whole purpose of speaking the Bhagavad Gita by Krishna to Arjuna was so that Arjuna would voluntarily turn to Krishna and surrender. Karishye vachanam tava. No, so we all have free will. So our heart means, what do we choose to love? That Krishna does not control. That we choose. So in that sense, see, Krishna is the supreme controller. But he is not the sole controller. We are also Ishwaras. And within our tiny domain, we have some control. That control is given to us by Krishna. In that sense, Krishna still remains the supreme controller. But Krishna has given that control to us.
Hare Krishna, thank you so much for the wonderful class. I was wondering about free will. Sometimes we make mistakes that seem to be above our desire to make that mistake. It's sometimes like something is pushing us towards making that mistake, even if we know that we should not do that. So my question is, how do we know if that is a bad choice of the free will, or if it's Krishna actually making you do that mistake so that he's wanting to teach you something?
Okay. So if something beyond us seems to push us to do something, then is it our misuse of free will or is it Krishna pushing us so that we will learn something? Well, there are two different points over here. See, generally, we should never attribute our actions to Krishna. It should not be that I make a mistake that creates a lot of inconvenience for others and then I say, actually, my mistake was arranged by Krishna, so all of you do some tapasya. It got like that. If I am supposed to cook food and I cook terribly and then everybody has to eat the terrible food, you know, Krishna wants to give up sense gratification. No, that is not our philosophy at all. If we make a mistake, we take responsibility for our mistake. So even if there is some higher power which seems to push us to do certain thing, but still we shouldn't assume that it is Krishna. We should assume that it is my own conditionings. Arjuna talks about atakena prayuktoyam papam charati purusha. If you consider the example of Kaikeyi, Kaikeyi did something which no one thought she would do. Even she did not think I could do such a thing. She banished Ram and caused ultimately the death of her husband. Now, she took responsibility for it. And she regretted it. There are many songs in the Bhakti literature, Ramayana literature, about how she repents and she laments about what she has done. Now, when she comes with Bharat to request Ram to come back to the kingdom, and Ram uses Paduka, at that time he tells Bharat, don't be hard on Kaikeyi. Whatever she did was ordained by the gods. Although he says this, Kaikeyi hears it. But still, Kaikeyi doesn't know, that means I am not responsible. Still, she feels remorseful. If we have made a mistake, we should take responsibility. But it's important to understand that no mistake that we can ever do can ever thwart Krishna's plan. Krishna's plan is not necessarily one fixed line. Krishna's plan is one broad direction. So even if we cut lanes, we go from here to there, Krishna can still keep us on the right track. So after we have committed a mistake, we take responsibility, I made a mistake, but there is something for me to learn over here. So although it was my mistake, Krishna is not just punishing me for my mistake, Krishna is giving me an opportunity to learn. So yes, Krishna can teach us, and there is always something to learn in this world, even through our mistakes. But just because there is something to learn through our mistakes, does not mean that our mistakes are not our mistakes. Okay? So, okay. One last question. Okay, I don't know. Somebody can tell me when to stop. Last question.
Prabhuji, you spoke about the difference between coincidence and miracle. So I have two questions in that regard. So usually, is coincidence, is it arranged or is it controlled or is it just accidental? That's one thing. And the other...
Is it accidental or is it arranged? Well, ultimately, at one level, nothing is accidental in the world. No, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hriddeshe Arjuna Tishtati. It is the Lord who is guiding the wanderings of all living beings. So generally, when we use the word accidental, or say science uses the word chance, it happened by chance. What it means is that we can't know the cause-effect chain that led to that happening. That the cause-effect chain is too elusive, too complicated for us to find out. So, when we can't find the cause-effect connection, that's what we call as chance. So, for example, somebody gets cancer. Now, there are certain diseases, we say that the cause for them is not known. Now, that doesn't mean the cause is exactly not known. But precisely, why did this cancer come to this person, not to that person? So, that is difficult to know. So, that's what we mean by chance or accident or misfortune. What that means is, we don't or can't know the cause-effect chain that led to that event.
Okay. And also the medical miracles, we speak about that. Is that actually miracle or is it coincidence, usually when we see that?
Well, okay. Medical miracles. See, as I said, the word miracles is often used for even events within the natural world. So that's fine. Now, medical miracles, generally, it depends. There is this whole phenomenon of faith healing, which many Christians, especially evangelical Christians, try to tout to turn people toward Christianity. Most of it is just like a placebo effect. You know, people who are crippled, just by the power of faith, they suddenly seem to get out of wheelchair and walk. But they walk on the stage and they walk for a few minutes. After that, they are not able to walk. So sometimes the mind can override the body. But that doesn't mean the body's limitation doesn't last. So that's a different thing. But so faith healing is generally, it's questionable. It's bogus, generally speaking. Now, medical miracles, generally, again, what it means is that, you know, by the normal knowledge of biology, and the working of the body, we think that there's no way this could have been cured. And yet it is cured. So again, it's more in the sense of the causal mechanism is not known. So now, can Krishna intervene miraculously and cure someone? It is possible. Like say when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraces the leper Vasudeva and suddenly leprosy disappears. So it is not that while Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is embracing, Chaitanya is injecting some medicine into his body and that's how the leprosy disappeared. No, it was a miracle. So sometimes cures can happen by miracles also. But generally, what science calls as medical miracles are basically like unexplained cases. We have not yet found the cause effect mechanism in that. Okay? So thank you very much. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Gaur Premanande.